Good evening, guys. How are you? You okay? Hey, John.
How are you, Dan?
I'm very well, thank you, mate. Caught you with a mouthful of food, have we?
You did. I've got to leave for rehearsal in about 20 minutes.
Have you? What's on the menu before rehearsal then?
Cod, cabbage, baby spring, and olive oil.
Nice. Solid. It's got everything in. It's perfect. Hey, Brian, how are you, buddy? You okay?
Doing excellent. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well. Thank you, mate. Had a good day?
Oh, absolutely. Tons of sightseeing.
Yes, still full of sightseeing. Got all your steps in today, then.
Absolutely.
Amazing. Amazing. Hey, Eric. Hey, Jared. How are you boys? You okay? Good. Right. I'll just wait for a couple more minutes, guys, and then we'll get started. Keep putting in the waiting room. So, yeah, just giving you guys where you're in here a little bit of an overview. So, welcome to the guys that haven't heard me before. And well, hey, Paul, how are you, buddy? You okay?
Perfectly fine.
Good. Great to see you, mate. Great to see you. Yeah. So as I was saying, guys, kind of those of you guys who have heard me speak, obviously, you know, I always try to present a slideshow. But obviously, I let you all you guys that haven't listened to me, I like questions. Me and Brian were talking about it today. So kind of any point at which kind of you've got any questions, because today is going to be all around motivation and kind of looking at strategies, sorry, and creating a foolproof system. To be able to understand that when motivation does wane, which is perfectly normal. So, kind of for me, it's understanding we are all human. We all go through different challenges, some good, some bad. And it's understanding that motivation is kind of transitional, it comes and it goes. So, for me, it's teaching a formula for success that you can revert to when motivation does wane. So again, we could go down the route of identifying kind of highest values and all those sort of things, which I'm sure a lot of you guys have done that we'll be doing in preceding calls. But today's very much around motivation and just understanding kind of that motivation is transitional. So kind of it's not always going to be there, but I speak to my clients a lot about this in regards to in your life is there's a so many moving parts, okay? And it's understanding and being able to itemize with those moving parts what serves you and what doesn't, and understanding in relation to your highest goals. So talking to a lot of you guys on here, then you've all got composition goals, you've all got aesthetics goals, whether it be kind of body fat reduction, weight loss, muscle building, longevity. They're all goal orientated, right? And it's understanding that there will be a certain set of actions that you're expected to undertake to achieve those goals. But it's also understanding alongside the drive and desire to those goals, we have family, we have work, we have loads of different situations in your life that potentially could lead to lack of motivation or overwhelm, procrastination, and all those sort of factors. So today's very much around just looking at a strategy that we can, or strategies, plural, that we can implement. That you can take with you and use. So, kind of, I've got a slideshow today. So, let me just share my screen and just give me a thumbs up because I can see a few of you guys on my screen if you can see these slides okay. John, yeah, Brian, perfect. Perfect. So, I'm just going to move you guys. So, bear with me. So, kind of, how I've tried to create today is those of you guys that have heard me speak before know I like a little bit of science, bit of a geek. So like the science behind it, but also the practical application. So I think motivation is very much one of those things where we are going to look at dopamine and we're going to have a deep dive into dopamine, but the reality is it's situational as well. So it's understanding that kind of, yes, dopamine is responsible for the excitability and the excitement around motivation, but understanding that circumstances that you may consciously or unconsciously put yourself in may lead to that motivation going up or coming down. So for me, the cofactors of sleep, stress, digestion, nutrition, training, kind of lifestyle outside of kind of the gym is all going to be important factors, which we're going to go over today. So as you'll see on the slide in front of you, it's only two main points, but again, they've got multiple facets to them. So first of all, we're going to look at what is motivation, the science behind it. So have a look at dopamine and essentially kind of what drives dopamine and how it's responsible for sometimes how you feel. And then what I've put together is almost a four-step framework with the most important things that you can do if you do feel motivation start to wane. So again, for me, motivation kind of is one of those things that kind of will, as I said earlier, will move up and down. But if you've heard Ben speak about it before, a call a couple of weeks ago in regards to the lifestyle operating system. If you have systems in place, then
Dan,
yes,
there's
mate.
somebody in the waiting room, and they messaged and want us to let you know.
There's quite a few people in there. Thank you for letting me know, Jared. Let me just move that across so you guys don't see that. I thought we was going to have a short, a very intimate call today, guys. And there's all these people in the waiting room. Apologies. I'll just let all those guys in. Hey, everybody. Sorry, I got caught up talking. Max, you know what I'm like when I get up to getting talking. And Nat, you know, and George as well. To be fair, all you guys that were waiting in the waiting room, you know, I love a chat and I got into my chat. So sorry for not letting you in. You haven't missed much so far. All I've said to the guys to begin with is just looking at kind of motivation, and today's going to be derived around motivation and just understanding that I was saying to the guys a second ago, motivation will wane sometimes. It can be up and down, but most importantly, if we collectively have a strategy in place that when motivation does wane, we're going to be able to go clear of the down moments. I was saying a second ago that motivation is very multifaceted. We're going to look today at the hormonal effects. So, looking at dopamine and neurotransmitters, those of you guys that have heard me speak before know I love a little bit of science, and also some practical application strategies that when you do feel motivation wanes, that will bring you back to that relative equilibrium and kind of not get you back on track, is keep the momentum moving forward. I'm not a big believer in kind of falling off track. Everything for me is momentum, and it's understanding that in different parts, and different parts of your journey, there's going to be different part cups that you're going to be filling. So there's going to be personal, professional, physical, and sometimes you can't fill all those cups equally. And it's understanding if the physical aspect of what you're doing does have to take a bit of a back step because other things take priority, kind of it's being okay with it and understanding that motivation will wane in that aspect. But if we have a collective operating system to move through it, then we should be fine. So again, guys, I'm going to head into the slides. If there is any questions, please unmute yourself and just stop me as Jared just did. So for those of you guys that are just joined, learning names today, what is motivation and the science behind it, and my four-step framework to help stay driven and focused. And then as always, we'll finish off with question and answer at the end, but feel free to ask questions as we move through. So I've just started off with the definition of motivation. So this is one of a few different definitions. So it's a reason or reasons for acting or behaving in a particular way. And as just mentioned, this can be affected by multiple different facets. So it can be think, as we've said a second ago, things from a health perspective, sleep, stress, digestion, it can be environment, it can be work. It can be a number of factors that can kind of lead us to acting in a certain way. And I was having a conversation with a client today, and I think it's just for us as individuals being able to create an awareness around when we are conducting or doing something that doesn't serve us, to be able to remedy that and create a system to kind of come out of it. So for me, identification and being able to identify when motivation in a certain area is waning is a superpower because it allows you to act accordingly and be able to reset the balance pretty quickly. So looking at a couple of different types of motivation. So I put down here intrinsic and versus extrinsic motivation. So a few of you guys may have heard of this, but I wanted to just clarify what these mean. So let's start with intrinsic. So the definition of intrinsic motivation is typically something that's driven by internal factors like interest, enjoyment, or typically a sense of accomplishment. So things like, if I had to give an example, reading a book because you enjoy it, solving a puzzle for the challenge, or learning a new skill simply because you find it fascinating. So it's essentially the characteristics around intrinsic motivation is very much it's focusing on the activity itself rather than any sort of external outcomes. So then we move to extrinsic motivation. Again, the opposite to intrinsic. So it's driven by external factors, such as things like recognition, avoiding punishment, rewards. So again, an example of extrinsic motivation would be kind of working hard to get a promotion at work, back at school, or if you studying to get a good grade, or something as simple as cleaning your room, for instance. So the characteristics of extrinsic motivation kind of focuses less on the activity itself of intrinsic motivation and focuses a lot more on the outcome of the activity rather than the activity itself. So it's important to clarify when it comes to motivation, the two different types, because as we get a bit deeper into identifying your whys and those sort of things, you'll be able to understand which type of motivation you potentially need and kind of how to sustain it as well. So how does dopamine stand in all this? So as we said earlier, we've got to look at kind of neurotransmitters as a byproduct, because dopamine has a massive role on motivation, in my opinion. So again, I've spoke about dopamine in previous calls that you guys have been there. For those of you guys that haven't heard me speak before, we'll just deep dive into dopamine's role to begin with. So dopamine is characterized as a neurotransmitter. Okay, so we've got a lot of different neurotransmitters in our brain. Okay, and it's simply put, it's a chemical messenger that typically will pass on signals between certain nerve cells in the brain. And you guys have heard of dopamine before. So it's kind of referred to in normal society as a feel-good neurotransmitter, or the pleasure molecule. I've heard it described as sometimes. So the reason why it's called that is because typically dopamine will be released during pleasurable experiences, and I feel is crucial for things like motivation and reward-seeking behaviors. So kind of, for me, kind of understanding how to regulate dopamine is super important. And you find that dopamine can sometimes lead to ill pattern behavior. So Ben talks a lot about controlling your arousal state. So when you're up and when you're down, and the up part of kind of controlling your arousal state is very much dopamine. So being able to kind of keep that manageable and be excitable, but most importantly, keep it under control. So dopamine kind of works. So when we feel something pleasurable, or potentially from an extrinsic motivation factor, anticipate a reward, the brain often releases dopamine into what we call the reward pathway, which again is typically a network of brain regions that are involved in motivation and pleasure. So the reward system itself is kind of designed to reinforce behaviors that are important for survival, well-being, things like eating, drinking, and engaging in social interactions. So dopamine is probably one of the biggest players in that brain's reward system, which is why it's so important. So what can dopamine help us with? So from a motivation standpoint, but also I would imagine from a goal setting standpoint, it's going to help us learn which actions lead to both positive outcomes and motivates us to pursue those actions. So when we feel good, and we obviously that dopamine gets released, we want more of that same feeling. So it's important to understand when we are chasing or kind of working towards that dopamine high, it's having things in, going back to what I said at the start of the call, of things that serve us. Because in the same way that dopamine can serve us, it can also serve us in wrong behaviors. So to give you an overview, kind of in some cases, when I've spoke to people previously, things like infidelity, it's chasing that high. So understanding that everything is well within your control, but being able to identify and understand dopamine is going to be a strength and a massive tool in your arsenal. So it's also going to play a key role in goal setting. Primarily from a goal setting standpoint, it's going to be persistence. So going back to extrinsic motivation, the release of dopamine when we achieve that goal reinforces that behavior and encourages to move the goalpost and set new goals. So whilst dopamine itself is a key player in motivation, there's other neurotransmitters that we need to look at. Other neurotransmitters that we want to be looking at. So things like serotonin, endorphin, they're all going to be massively responsible for opposite things like mood, happiness, and motivation itself. So while dopamine is the feel-good neurotransmitter, we still can't avoid or ignore things like serotonin and then endorphins as well. But for today, we'll stick with dopamine primarily, just because everything today is linked to motivation and motivation pathways. So again, it's important to remember, and the key takeaways from kind of dopamine is the examples that we'll use of what its role and responsibility is for pleasure. Okay. So pleasurable experiences, goal seeking experiences, but also understanding that dopamine can, and the reward system itself can be hijacked sometimes. So by addictive substances. So looking at things like drugs, alcohol, poor behaviors, leading to things like compulsive cravings and a loss of control. So in the same way, dopamine is fantastic for the reward system and motivation, it can also, which I'm sure some of us will be able to kind of identify from history and those sort of things, it can also lead to loss of control and bad behaviors. So understanding how to regulate, but most importantly, understanding your purpose and what serves you is going to be an important factor of this. So looking at all the positives of kind of dopamine is important, but it's also important to look at the opposite side. So why motivation sometimes fades? As I said earlier on in the call, it's natural and it's normal. You're not weird if sometimes you get up and you don't feel like going to the gym. It's inevitable. Or you don't feel like doing a task that you've committed to doing, okay? It's understanding that you are human, but if we create, it's typically temporary. So it's going to fluctuate on those emotions, environment, and energy levels. So the key to understand when it does fluctuate is discipline and systems. So if we can incorporate the correct discipline and systems, motivation will always be moving forward. And it's going back to what we said in regards to the lifestyle operating system and having a particular set of non-negotiables in place that when you do inevitably wake up and not want to do the thing that you've committed to doing, that you've kind of that non-negotiable, that if you flip into kind of the operating system that you've created and exercise the discipline, I'm not saying it will always work, but it gives you a greater chance of success. So things that can affect kind of motivation and why does motivation fade? One of the biggest things for me, which we're going to talk about a little bit later on, is lack of clarity and a strong why. I often say to my clients, kind of when they talk, internal dialogue is massive for me. So I'm going to try, or I want to. For me, they're very kind of wishy-washy words, and I try to eliminate from the internal communication. You either are or you aren't, you will or you won't. There is no fine line, because I'm a big believer that if you try to do something, subconsciously you're giving yourself a little bit of a get out. So if something else crops up, oh, I'm not going to do that because this is more important. So being very forthright with how you speak to yourself and that internal dialogue is important. And just having kind of that clarity in the most important why and keeping that at the forefront of your mind at all times. Again, energy levels are low, so that could be food related, stress related, and all the kind of cofactors of health. Kind of a big thing in regards to lack of motivation for a lot of people is fear of failure. So I talk to my clients a lot around kind of every human decision being based around fear. Fear is, for me, is closely linked to protection. So we often don't push ourselves out into that social environment because we fear being judged. So that's just a loose example. But fear of failure and perfectionism are massive things that kind of stunt motivation and blunt creativity. Another thing, too many distractions and no focus. So we live in a world and an age of social media today, massive distraction. I forget who I was talking to many years ago in regards to social media, kind of, if it's not making you money or it's not influencing you in a positive way, i.e. you're not learning from it, it's not welcome in your life. So the quickest way to blunt motivation is comparison. You've all heard the phrase, comparison is a thief of joy. And social media is big for that at the moment. You see with the youngsters nowadays, kind of everything is comparative. So trying to avoid as many distractions, outside or external distractions, as possible is important. And the last thing I'd say in regards to what stunts motivation is no immediate reward. So going back to that extrinsic motivation, if there's no reward attached, sometimes there's no motivation. But understand these are all normal human behaviors. And if any of those resonate with you, they're big. Write them down. And again, as we go through the process, we can look at we can look at strategies to start to overcome them. But I think the biggest takeaway is just understanding that lack of motivation for certain things is natural and it happens to us all. I, as an example, I absolutely love what I do. I often say to people, I've not worked a day in the last 20 years of my life, but has there been days where it's been a little bit harder to get going? Things have been a little bit slower on the uptick because of potentially what's happened the previous night. I've been up a little bit later, etc. Absolutely. But the operating systems I've created have stopped me from falling down a slippery slope. I'm going to say it and I'll repeat it a little bit later, but kind of, I've always said there's no 0 days. Okay. I always have to do one thing that positively moves me forward in some area of my life. So understanding that there's no 0 days and kind of having the right system in place is going to be massive for you guys. I'm going to stop there before I move on to the four-phase framework. Do we have any questions at this point? Because I am aware that I like to talk very quick. Being British as well, a lot of you guys are probably thinking, what's this guy saying? But is there any questions off those first couple of slides? Anybody that struggles with motivation or anybody that kind of the points I've talked over just a second ago have resonated with them, be happy to share. Cool. Okay, no sharing yet, but you're all expected to talk towards the end of the call. So I'm going to carry on, guys. But again, I'm going to move into the second part. So if there is any questions, please do let me know. So moving into the four-phase framework for sustainable motivation that I've created. So I've tried to break it down into four phases for you guys so that those of you guys that take notes can kind of be able to itemize and write points off the back of it. So phase one is clarifying your why. Phase two is optimizing your energy and using the four resiliencies model. Phase three is master your focus with intentional systems. And then phase four is build bulletproof consistency and adaptability. So what I've tried to do with each of these phases is kind of is bullet point a few areas, and then we're going to talk over a few deeper kind of meanings to each point as well. So for those of you guys that haven't seen the 5 why before, okay, I'm a big believer that basically gives you a lot more clarity and fuels long-term drive. Because if we can identify the deep root of the why, it's going to give us more clarity, which ultimately is going to give us more emotional leverage. One point that I probably didn't mention in the earlier slides is kind of I've got it at the bottom of this slide, Shari, and you'll see it at the bottom, is kind of understanding emotional versus logical motivation. So kind of as an example, kind of logical emotion is something like, I should work out to stay healthy, for instance. Whereas emotional motivation is, if I don't work out, I don't get into shape, I'll set a poor example to my kids. So that's an example of logical versus emotional motivation. Which one is going to be stronger? Emotion is going to win every single time. So that's the goal of what we're trying to do with the five whys, is not understand the superficial why of kind of, I want to get down to 10% body fat. That's very superficial. If we can unpack the reasons why you want to be there and how it's going to serve you in all the different areas of your life, that's going to give you more clarity. It's going to give you more purpose. And then in the long run, it's going to create a stronger emotional connection, which ultimately kind of from an action standpoint is going to kick your ass out of bed in the morning. So the five whys is simply put, basically, it's just a problem solving technique. And it involves asking yourself repeatedly why. So it's deep diving into the actual cause of the problem rather than just addressing the symptoms and the superficial nature of what you want. So as an example for the five whys, I've wrote some questions. So what do you want? So an example to what do you want would be, I want to get into the best shape of my life. Okay, again, for me, that's individually specific. What does that look like? Because for me, getting into the shape of my life compared to John, compared to Nat, compared to Max, all of those things look different. Okay. And all of those, that statement is probably true for each one of the three of us. But the why is that important? Why does it matter? What will happen to you if you don't do this? And how will you feel once you achieve it is all going to be totally different. So as a working example for you, so the what do you want is, I want to get to the best, want to get into the best shape of my life. Why is that important? Because I want to feel confident. Potentially I was maybe bullied as a teenager and there's a deeper meaning, and I want to perform at a high level. Why does that matter? Because I want to be an example to my family. What will happen if you don't do this? I'll stay stuck in mediocrity and I may regret it later, and I'm not going to be an example to my children. And then we're flipping the script in the last question with future planning. How will you feel once you achieve it? Proud, confident, and unstoppable. So essentially, if we'd have taken, I want to get in the best shape of my life, very superficial. There's no deeper meaning. You waking up every morning, I've got to go to the gym this morning, but I'm tired. Oh, I want to get into the best shape of my life. That's not really going to motivate you to get there. Okay. But if we delve a little bit deeper and we go into, again, because I want to be the patriarch of my family and I want to be a really strong working example to my children. When you get up and you're a little bit tired, I can't be bothered to train today. But the kids know that I'm going to the gym today. And when they get up, because it's a Saturday, they're going to see I've just got out of bed. So tying an emotional attachment to it is going to make it a lot stronger and just delving a little bit deeper beneath the surface. So guys that work with me will know that kind of we unpack a lot of stuff and get into the depths of understanding oneself, as well as kind of the understanding around why somebody wants something, is super important. And it's very easy to, I often say, and it's probably not the correct thing to say as a coach, but it's very easy to get people into shape. But creating superhuman men is difficult to do because there's so many facets. There's so many parts of the life that we have to adapt to. But again, delving a little bit deeper into your whys, because everybody sat on this call, if you can do one thing for me today from a motivational standpoint, is if you haven't got your whys, understand your whys. Why do you do certain things in your life? And going back to a previous point, does it serve you? And if it doesn't, how can we reframe it and change what you do to substantiate you working a bit closer towards your goals and in line what your highest values are? Because all that happens when you're completing actions that don't align with your values, there's a discourse. And slowly but surely, subconscious resentment sets in. And then things start to be unenjoyable. So kind of for me, kind of living in the context of where you want to go. And don't get me wrong, I'm privileged because I get to do this and I've got to do this for 20 years and I absolutely love it. Sometimes people have to do things to facilitate a greater goal. And we understand that. But if you can identify that and kind of understand the outcome, which is 0.5 on here, again, it makes it a lot more manageable. I've currently got a client at the moment that doesn't like it. It came into the process quite about 20 weeks ago. We've got a track of it's physically, it looks fantastic at the moment, but the mental side is still struggling because he still does a job 9 to 5 that he doesn't enjoy. But we're in the process. His goal has always been to be in the fitness industry, and we spend a lot of our calls talking about what he's doing for business in regards to kind of moving professions. So for me, it's not always attainable in the very get-go, but over time, if you have a broad understanding of your long-term goals, you can start to put strategies in place to facilitate moving towards them. So my son will tell you, my son's nearly 21. As he was growing up, there was a word that was banned in our house, and it was, I can't. I can't is not a real word. But again, that's a lack of motivation, because anybody can achieve anything that they want to if there's a carefully placed strategy in place. And I always use the example, I can't make $1 million in the next 5 minutes right now. I can't, I could say. But if I work myself to a position eventually in my life, there is a potential that one day I could get there. So it's look at the I can't doesn't apply to long-term results. It can apply to something very simple, but banning that word and going back to what we said in regards to the internal dialogue and positive reinforcement, and be careful how you speak to yourself. Be very definitive in how you speak to yourself. Carry that over and things change very quickly. So that's phase one. So if we move into phase two, which is optimize your energy and using the four resiliencies model. So we're going to go over these. Some of you guys may have heard Ben talk about this. You may have seen the videos of Ben talk about this, but I want to reinforce this because this is a massive part of kind of what we do here in Muscle Intelligence that serves you in all areas of your life. So we're going to go through each kind of resiliency and just talk a little bit about it. So obviously optimizing your energy in a broad stroke, again, we're looking at nutrition, training, kind of mental responses, behaviors, kind of, and all those sort of factors. So we're going to break them down a little bit more. So starting with physical capability, that's going to be more your training resilience. So how you move, how you lift, making you pain-free if you're experienced in pain, and functionality. So being superhuman from an output standpoint. So it's very much going to be based around kind of the external factors of your training, your cardiovascular work, and all those sort of things. So how can we improve this? Mastering, you guys, obviously, also hopefully send videos to your coaches. Okay, so we can improve training resilience by improving and mastering proper movement mechanics, strength training, mobility drills, improving your VO2 max, kind of improving the cardiovascular system, looking at certain different metrics when it comes to recovery. They're all going to be important factors in improving your physical capability. So examples for that is going to be just that. So looking at metrics that are related to health, but also kind of if you have ever been in pain. I've got a client that kind of is a bit fearful to do certain exercises. He's just come on board and he actually went through his program today and said he feared those exercises, but he got through them okay and pretty much proved himself wrong that it's not the exercise that is the problem. It's the mechanics and the movement around them that was potentially putting him at greater risk of pain. So improving your physical capability is going to give you kind of, again, the longevity from a performance perspective that you're looking for. Then we move into metabolic flexibility. So this is going to be based a little bit more around your nutrition and your energy resilience. So simple things like your body's ability to efficiently switch between energy sources, so carbs and fats, so that metabolic flexibility that we talk about. So again, come into this process, I bet a lot of you guys kind of were using a lot of carbs. So those you guys that work with Greg, so understanding that your body prefers, well, muscly, typically it's going to be carbohydrate from a brain optimization standpoint. Whereas if we think about dopamine and where it's released, it's a brain. What's your brain's preferred energy source? It's fats. So being flexible enough to be able to efficiently switch between energy sources, i.e. carbs and fats, is a great, great point of metabolic flexibility. So we can improve this by not looking at just macronutrients, looking at eating nutrient-dense foods, improving things like insulin sensitivity, managing caloric intake, and most importantly, understanding the activity levels that go alongside those as well. So metabolic flexibility is more geared towards your nutrition and your energy resilience, which if we think about you moving better, you lift, you being stronger, you functioning without pain, you being able to utilize food for fuel, your body being fueled in the correct way, that's naturally going to increase your dopamine, which in turn is going to increase your motivation. I always talk about food to the body like a car. So those of you guys that you are in the US, if you put $10 of gas in your car to get you from one side of the US to the other, it wouldn't make it very far. And that's how I choose to see food. Food is fuel, but food isn't just as simple as protein, carbs, and fats. It's looking at micronutrients and phytonutrients and getting an abundance of different components to turn your car into the elite Ferrari that it should be. So how I choose to see food is fuel, but making sure that you're fueling the car up optimally. So that comes from a calorie standpoint, but also the micronutrient density as well. So moving on to number three, which is physiological flexibility. So this is geared around, so whereas the first two, remember, were nutritional energy, resilience, training resilience, this one's more designed around recovery and adaptability resilience. So we move a little bit more into your biometric feedback data here. So your ability to handle stress, okay? Those of you guys that have heard me speak before, understanding that stress is like a bit like kind of lack of motivation, stress is inevitable. But what's necessary stress and what's unnecessary stress? And how is your central nervous system responding to those different types of stress? And your ability to, again, going back to controlling your arousal state is going to be super important here. So we know we want a kind of 2-to-1, 3-to-1 balance of parasympathetic dominance to sympathetic dominance. So being able to identify, is there things in your life that cause you stress that aren't necessary, that, again, don't serve you? So it's our ability to handle stress, recover, and most importantly, maintain performance. And that's performance in all areas of our life, being a father, being a husband, performing in the gym, being a friend. I saw a call from Rob saying that he's coaching at the Oval today, the cricket team, being able to get out to the Oval and coach his cricket team. That's what we're talking about, kind of recovering adaptability resistance. So that's more your physiological flexibility. And then your last one is psychological flexibility. So going a little bit more into mindset and mental resilience. So it's understanding, again, humanizing everything that I'm talking about. Life will throw a curveball at you now and again. This process that you've been on or are currently on with us here at Muscle Intelligence hasn't been without problem. There's always going to be a spanner that's being thrown into work. So it's our ability to handle life challenges, remain focused, and maintain drive, and understand that all of these points, the best thing about all these points is they're all controlled by you. They're not dictated by any sort of external factors. They're all points that can be controlled by you, and understanding that what doesn't serve you doesn't need to remain. So kind of psychological flexibility, things that we can improve this by. So a big one for me that my guys will know and Nat will know about this is gratitude, mindfulness, exposure to discomfort. Okay, nothing worth having came easy was a phrase that you guys have probably heard before. So embrace discomfort, embrace the hurt, embrace things that perceivably aren't as positive, because I'm a big believer there's positives in life and there's lessons. Okay, there's no such thing as negativity, because in any perceived negative situation, there is a lesson there for you to be taught. We either choose to learn from it and grow, or we sit and wallow in self-pity. And with my fair share of challenges throughout my life, kind of one thing, when we overcome those challenges, what happens? We get stronger. We learn an operating system and we understand that we're not unbreakable, but we end up dealing with the problem. So for me, it's exposing yourself to discomfort that's going to improve psychological flexibility and improve that mental resilience. Also, from you guys that own companies and stuff, leadership development. So it's being able to kind of, again, optimally lead, because leadership development for me is multifaceted. You're a boss of a company. You've got a husband and a family. You've got children. Kind of for me, leadership is encased in all of those. I see myself as a patriarch of my family. I see myself as a leader. I would like to think we're all leaders here at Muscle Intelligence collectively. And it's important that we don't break down at the earliest opportunity. So building that psychological flexibility and that mental resilience is going to be super important as well. So a couple of, I think kind of it's a book, I forget the name of it, but I think it's called Anti-Fragile, but basically talks a lot about challenges making you stronger. Okay. And understanding that kind of what doesn't break you kind of empowers you. So understand that challenges are there to test you. And the positive thing, as I said earlier, is you have a choice whether you overcome them or not. And just reframing obstacles, kind of. I'm with my guys, it's looking at them in different paths and understanding that kind of we get a choice of how we perceive things. And perception is a wonderful thing. Because often, and you guys will probably be able to agree, that the worst things happen and how we perceive it is not the actual reality. I always use the example of text messages. Text messages are probably the most misconstrued things in the world. You send a message to your wife and a message comes back and you look at the message replying like you're confused, because things can be misconstrued through perception. So being able to reframe obstacles are going to be important. And Ben talks a lot about this, and I'm a big believer in as well, in how we talk to ourselves. So using the words, I have to do this. You get to do this. There's so many people in the world would love to be in the position that you're in right now, and that would bite your arm off to be in your position. So reflip the thinking and reframe obstacles of kind of from I have to do this or I've got to do this to I get to do this. So it's that positive reaffirmation. I've said multiple times through the call already, internal dialogue is a powerful thing when it comes to motivation. And understand, motivation doesn't come from anywhere else. Sometimes it can extrinsically, but when all the dust settles, it all starts in here. And being able to self-motivate is super important, because looking and trying to get, we need external support sometimes, but understanding that most of that motivation and that drive comes from within. So just going through these resiliences and kind of looking at where potentially in those four areas that you're lacking or potentially you need a little bit more of is something that I'd avidly recommend. And I'd say is going to help you massively in regards to decluttering your brain and essentially getting you into a position where there's a lot more clarity. So alongside the whys, using the four resiliences to really start to itemize the levers that you can pull, because nobody's going to be performing optimally in every single one of those areas. And I'm a big believer that you're only as strong as your weakest link. I think I said that on the last call. But being able to be honest enough to understand and foresee where that is a skill in itself as well. So moving into phase three, we spoke about it briefly, is mastering focus with intentional systems. So going back to the five whys, clarify your priorities. Identify kind of the key objectives and identify them within an inch of their life. So as I said, I don't just want it to be, I want to get leaner. Put a definitive goal in there. So I want to be X percent at X pounds. I want to run a 5K time in X time, 26:07. So be very clear and distinct when clarifying the goals and priorities. And then once you've got those and you've kind of stuck those on a whiteboard, you can start to align all your daily actions with those long-term goals. And you'll be able to spot very quickly which ones of your daily actions don't align. So again, if your goal is to be, for instance, I'm just using body fat because we're here. If he wants to be sub 10%, does that visit to the pizza house or kind of the pancake bar on a Sunday or some sort of action from a food perspective lead towards getting sub 10%? No. So once we've got to the five whys and we understand them, we're clear distinctly what's going to be driving us. Matching your daily and aligning your daily actions with those goals is going to be super important. Then off the back of creating and clarifying your priorities, we can start to design your system. So creating, I'm big, and Nat will be able to tell you this, Brian's going to see soon, and I think Dale might be on here as well, is creating routines and structures. Okay, so time blocking or the Pomodoro technique. So if those of you guys that haven't heard of the Pomodoro technique, basically it's a time management method that basically encourages focused work with time intervals. So as an example, kind of you could pick a time anywhere between 15, 25 minutes and 2 hours, for instance. You'd work, you'd set a timer, obviously clear all distractions, set a timer for 25 minutes. As soon as that timer goes off, you'd have a short break. So it might be 5 minutes, then set the timer for 25 minutes, go again. You'd repeat that process four times. So you'd have essentially a 2 hour work block with 4 or 5 minute gaps or 3 5 minute gaps. And then you'd have a longer break after the fourth cycle. So really dialing into what you have to do. And you can apply this to goals, to work, to family stuff and those sort of things. I'm a big believer when my son's here, my phone goes away and I don't look at my phone at all. It's just something that is important because he's away at university and I don't get to see him much. But using these techniques and using work blocks I've seen with my clients has been highly effective. And you'll find that you'll get probably a lot more work done in a short space of time. So a lot of times at work, things are procrastinated, things don't get done. We're doing menial jobs that doesn't lead towards the end goal. So by having kind of short, sharp bursts is important because you're allowed to just focus in for that the time that you've set, go to work knowing that there's a short break as well. So it allows you to just be uber focused. Another thing that you can do if you don't like the kind of Pomodoro technique is I like things like a flow trigger routine. Okay. So something that triggers your flow. So for me, it's very much music. I love my music. And before I'm going into a work block, I'll have 5 to 10 minutes of kind of using music that I know kind of gets me a little bit more amped and gets a little bit pumped. I typically don't lack motivation, but kind of I love my music as well. So again, going to the gym, I'll listen to my fun fact. My gym is about 25 minutes away. The first 15 minutes of my car ride, I listen to a podcast. And then once I hit a certain point, this is going to sound really sad. Once I hit a certain point in the road, the music goes on and I start to get myself kind of into gym mode. So it's work for the 15 minutes and listening to a podcast that's going to serve me from a professional capacity standpoint. And then it's my work time. So those last 10 minutes on the way to the gym, I put some music on, music that I know that I enjoy that's going to get me in there. But you, alongside music, you could use breath work. You can use meditation. So it's whatever specific to you. There's no right or wrong to this. But having these systems in, I personally think will help you massively. So short working blocks or create a flow trigger routine. One of those will be great alongside your systems. The next point you'll see, I briefly alluded to it a couple of times already, is eliminate distractions. So develop strategies to minimize interruptions. First and primary thing is phones. Kind of airplane mode is probably the best thing that the iPhone has, and not being available when you shouldn't be available when you've got your head into a task. And again, this transfers across the board. If we get derailed and you've got new shiny object syndrome like myself, oh, look, new shiny object. And then I totally forget what I'm doing. So again, if you're that type of person, because there's so many moving parts, which I would imagine every single one of you men sat on this call are busy men. Okay, so itemizing and doing single tasks and not trying to multitask and trying to kind of spin loads of plates is going to be important. So minimize interruptions. And alongside minimizing those interruptions is set boundaries. Since coming on at MI, kind of, and it's something that I've seen in the duration of my career, is people's lack of ability to set boundaries and know what you're willing to tolerate. And I find that boundary setting is such an important skill, both in work, both in home, that is underestimated. And kind of identifying what you're willing to accept, or most importantly, what you're not willing to accept, is going to be super important. And this, from a motivational standpoint, can apply and cross-reference across board all areas of your life. the next point, sorry. The next point is iterate and reflect. So regular self audits. Again, I always say to my guys, the Muscle Intelligence Weekly Check-In is a self-audit. So quite often, I would imagine a lot of you guys kind of fill in your check-ins on a Friday, Saturday, press submit, kind of you get a response back from your coach that talks a little bit about your check-in, but you don't look at it again. That is a great opportunity to look at how your week's been and self-audit yourself for that week. The human optimization scorecard is fantastic to be able to see where have I scored low, where have I scored high, and be able to preempt the changes that you can talk to your coach about to set for the next week. Where are you slacking? Where is your biggest needle mover in that week? And using the muscle intelligence check-ins almost as a self-audit. So regularly reviewing your system's effectiveness and adjusting it based on the progress and challenges that you face, and pre-planning. Dale will know, kind of, I speak to him most weeks and kind of saying, right, where are you this week? Because there's been a lot of travel involved, and understanding that there's got to be kind of different operating systems for depending where we are. So nailing down and being able to give yourself a good self-audit a week, at least once a week. I sit down with myself typically on a Sunday morning after I finish my check-ins. And I just go through the week. What have I enjoyed? What haven't I enjoyed? What's moved me closer to my goal? What's moved me further from my goal, depending on what that is at that time? And self-auditing is a very powerful tool. But again, from a motivational standpoint, stops you from doing the stuff that you don't want to do, that doesn't serve you, that creates that subconscious resentment as well. And then the last point is utilize tools. So if you're into it, personally, as you all know, I'm a pen and paper kind of man. I'm old school, but you can leverage apps and technologies. So task managers and focus timers and all those sort of things that kind of reinforce what you want to do. So I think Motion's a good app in regards to diary setting and those sort of things that can give you a list of tasks. Personally, I like everything in front of me here on my laptop, but kind of utilizing the technology that we have available nowadays is a fantastic way to create routines and hold yourself accountable. I often say to my clients is, I will hold you accountable, but these are your goals. So creating foolproof systems for yourself are what's going to move you forward as well. So kind of just understanding those things. And if we can create your set of systems using those 5 points, it's going to essentially itemize and create a daily task list for you to succeed the week. And then lastly, phase 4 is build bulletproof consistency and adaptability. So now we've got the operating procedures, is kind of establish a clear process. So most of you guys will develop SOPs for work, create a standard operating procedure for how you run your life as well. And I'm not saying it should just be focused on health and fitness. I spoke to Brian about this today, is understanding how to manage what you're going, because every single one of you individual, and I would kind of create a different standard operating procedure for every single one of you guys, because you all work different hours, all got different things you do with your family, all got external things going on, but create a clear process that works for you. Looking at functional capacity is going to be important. Don't overstretch yourself. Don't spin too many plates. Essentially, kind of create an operating procedure that essentially kind of works in time, in tandem with what you currently have going on and your functional capacity, but also that's in close alignment with your goals as well. Embrace continuous improvement. So again, going back to what we just said in regards to the weekly audit and kind of auditing yourself, I'm a big believer in celebrating successes. Okay, and a lot of you guys on here, if we delved a little bit deeper, I always ask the question, when was the last time that you said to yourself, well done? A lot of you guys will probably say a long time ago, right? So kind of for me, embracing continuous improvement and celebrating successes is super important, because a lot of you guys are probably sat here in the best shape you've been for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. That needs to be celebrated. Yes, we are going to be moving the goalposts forward and setting new challenges and kind of that continuous improvement, but taking the time to give yourself that positive reinforcement, not looking for external validation and actually celebrating your own successes and embracing that continuous improvement is something that I really like as well. Again, something that we've touched on a lot today is kind of creating multiple operating systems. So as I've said, if you travel a lot for work, or you travel, you're kind of back and forward and you spend a lot of time in different locations, it's impossible to create an operating system for home that runs in alignment with you traveling. So create multiple operating systems. So home, travel, holidays, work. A lot of you guys travel across the country for work. Okay, you don't stay in the same hotels, you don't stay in the same cities, but you can create an operating system where you execute a certain set of kind of non-negotiables that you can apply anywhere in the world that you are. So I'm a big believer in kind of, I have a operating system, I spend most of my time at home, but hopefully going out to see Ben and the boys in Tampa next week, I'm devising an operating system for when I'm away, when I go on holiday. Kind of, it's all about control for me, and understanding kind of, it's going to be times where kind of motivation wanes, but if you can rely on the operating system on a time where you do feel a little bit more shitty, then that's going to be important. So create multiple operating systems and be flexible with it as well, and understand that family's got to come into it. So it might be, you might have an operating system Monday to Friday when you're at work, but your weekend might be engrossed with spending time with the kids, going out, doing fun things and those sort of things. That is totally fine. Create an operating system for it that is flexible, but runs in line with everything you're trying to achieve as well from a physical standpoint. And then the last point I'm going to say is kind of, what isn't measured can't be managed. My guys on this call will know I'm a bit of a stickler for data. Okay. So having kind of, I like to use the word KPIs, because why not? Why can't we apply KPIs to health and fitness, right? And motivation. So things that we can track consistency with, as I said earlier, things like VO2 max, HRV, blood pressure, deeper forms of testing, whether it's 6 monthly bloods, organic acid tests with Greg and those sort of things. There's so many different things that we can, and KPIs that we can track to ensure continued progress. And if you're seeing progress, your accountability is going to skyrocket and your ability to stay the course is going to be massively increased. But it's important to have trackable data. So on the days that you lack in motivation, so for instance, kind of you wake up, oh, I look terrible today, but you've got a tracking modality in there that measures body fat, and you do your body fat that same morning, your body fat's hot down 0.5%. Well, what's fact and what's thought? The thought is I look terrible, but the facts are you've lost 0.5% of body fat. So having data to track is super important, and just reinforces kind of consistency. Because if you know you're getting leaner subconsciously, you're going to action the thing. Whereas if you wake up and you just leave it to chance, you're like, oh, I feel crap today, the chances of you not doing what you said you was going to do is going to significantly increase. So building that consistency and adaptability, again, as you've heard me say multiple times today, is very much based around systems. And then the last points on obviously fade four, I use a couple of things with myself, is kind of the never miss twice rule. So kind of, things are going to, speed bumps are going to come in. You are going to have off days. Okay. So missing once is normal. Okay. Missing, it happens. It's life. We're human, but missing twice is the start of creating a new habit. So I use the phrases of my guys, we're all going to fall off a horse. It's not the falling off a horse that's the problem. It's how quickly can we get back on. So understanding we never miss twice. As I said to you earlier, no 0 days. So always do something on a daily basis that moves you close to the goal, no matter how small it is, because it keeps momentum. And everything is built on momentum and consistency. So never have any 0 days. And then I just wanted to, the last point was very much around procrastination. So again, those of you guys that procrastinate, I often implement with some people is kind of the 2-minute rule. Okay. So if you ever procrastinating or something feels slightly overwhelming, just do the first 2 minutes. Okay. Just do the first 2 minutes. Nothing was ever achieved not trying it. But the times when you start it and go, oh, it's not too bad, and then it gets done. You guys have all had those workouts where the worse you're thinking, oh, I ache, I can't go to the gym today, everything hurts, you're getting there, it's one of the best sessions you've had. So the 2-minute rule for me is if a task typically feels kind of overwhelming and you're procrastinating a little bit, just do it for 2 minutes and see the reaction. The motivation is going to skyrocket. So that's the four phases from today. That's pretty much all I've got on the slides, you'll be happy to know. But moving into kind of a Q&A now, have you guys got any questions? Is anybody willing to share some insights into kind of what they struggle with so we can offer some solutions? Kind of how did you guys find that? Please, one person speak up. So I'm going to pick the first person that I can see on the screen, and I can see you all smiling, so you're all expecting it. So has anybody kind of, again, yeah, great point, Nat. Kind of stretching is definitely something that you need to get better at, but you've got better at it this week because we've implemented it and we've put a sense of accountability on, right? And yeah, Nat's made a good point. Using the 16-hour audit to great effect. I'm sure Nat won't mind me talking about it. Kind of what we've itemized with Nat is kind of a daily 16-hour audit. So Monday through Sunday, we've got an every day because his routine is relatively similar and he can get waylaid doing other stuff for his business because he's kind of got not set working hours, but there's a fluctuation and having a young family and those sort of things. We've created a 16-hour audit Monday through Sunday, which he has, that kind of is his normal operating procedure. And yes, things don't always go to plan, but having that in place, I'm sure Nat will say, kind of has helped massively in just creating autonomy. Because if it's in the head and in your head, and there's a lot in your head, it's easy to get lost, right? So if you've got something visually, you can see it's going to help autonomy as well. Right, Jeff, I know you're there and you're unmuted. What have you got to say, my friend?
Yeah, so one of the things that I think sometimes is kind of difficult is you may have like a broad task, like I want to prepare for, you know, a new job next year or something like that. But there are a lot of subtasks that go along with that. Like, I've got to get this ready. I've got to get this template ready. I've got to do this, 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 and this. Yeah. And I think it is often easy to get overwhelmed by that broader list. And it's almost like the thing, you don't know which way to attack it. And that almost leads to kind of paralysis in and of itself. So I'd be curious your thoughts on, like, I kind of like the 25-5 kind of distribution and just pick something.
It's that whole old analysis by paralysis by analysis, right? So what I typically use when you've got a lot of tasks is I quite like, and I use myself, is a traffic light system. So if you've got all those goals on a list, start to itemize them in different colors. So red would be the most important parts of the task, which potentially need to be done sooner than the others and maybe the first things to do in preparation for the job. Then you've got the amber or the orange or whatever color you choose, which is, I'd say, so if I wanted to itemize it for you, if it's something next year, the red task would be 1 to 7 days, okay? The amber task would be potentially 1 to 30 to 60 days. And then the green task would be 1 to, let's say, 90 or 120 days, obviously. So you get all the reds done and then you move them up the list, essentially move them up the list. So you keep ticking things off. And, you know, with task lists, you take three off, you add three on, which is fine. But you just itemize them, which are the most important ones. And I find using that kind of traffic light system works because it allows me at the start of the day, right, what needs to get done and what can be get done in stages. And then if you miss, for instance, an amber task, you can just move it into the red task the next day. So kind of you don't have to use colors. You can just put an R or A or use a system that works for you. But itemize them in a traffic light system, I find, helps massively. It's a very simple, applicable thing that you can do that, again, just allow, because same as you, mate, when my task list is full, I'm like, damn, where do I start? But if you start to then itemize them, I find that that helps quite a lot as well.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Right, guys, I didn't realize the time, right? Has anybody else got any questions before we shoot off? I talk far too much. You guys should stop me a little bit quicker because I get overexcited and I start talking too much. Is there any more questions that I can help you guys with while I'm on the call tonight? Or this morning for some of you guys? No. Perfect. Right, guys. So as always, if you have any questions, because I know sometimes when we speak, kind of questions come into your mind. I'm always available, obviously, for you guys. If you've got any questions regarding anything I said, and those of you guys that are listening to this on a catch up, if you've got any questions, please feel free to ask, because, again, there's no such thing as silly questions. And asking questions, as you just did, Jeff, kind of, if I can give a little bit of advice that may move you closer or move you quicker towards your goal, is going to be of value. So yeah, thank you for your time tonight and this morning, for those of you guys that are on Eastern time. And I look forward to speaking to you guys in a few weeks, but thank you very much, and I look forward to speaking to you all soon.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too.